So now, my favorite part of the show, which is bringing in a live guest. And I'm solo today, which usually turns out pretty good, but I've got Dennis Sweeney from Dennis Sweeney Business Consulting, self-proclaimed rainmaker with me today. And we're live, brother, and welcome to Live with Rink and Laura, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate you including me and inviting me on your show.
So tell people how I found you, because it's cool. I cold called a cold caller.
Yeah. Well, I was listed in the written up in the Business Journal in November of last year.
A pretty good size article too.
Yeah, it was a great article. And Ryan called me, and I think he left a message that said something like, "Hey Dennis, this is a cold call, but it's a good one. So call me back. This is Ryan Rink." And I thought that was a pretty unique approach, and I appreciated the call, and certainly appreciate being here.
So I read an article, and it was the November article that I believe Dornbrook.
Yeah, James Dornbrook.
James Dornbrook wrote it, which is obviously a popular writer for the journal. And as you know, anything, one of the things Laura and I always talk about when we've got companies in here is that you've got to drive bottom line profit. Every for-profit company, correct me if I'm wrong here, when you do your planning, when you start January 1st, what's your number one goal?
Grow revenue.
Yeah, you have to, because by growing revenue provides payroll, and those people receive a check, which helps support their desires, their college, their all the stuff, right? So without revenue, the doors are shut and jobs are lost. So I get it, right? So if you're a for-profit company looking to grow revenue, this is going to be an awesome next 30, 45 minutes. But I love the article because I don't have it memorized, but what I read in there, and then this is my speak, so if it's wrong, correct me. But the way I read your article was you are a hired gun professional cold caller that go into companies to help them do things that they're quite frankly not doing properly today. Whether they're doing it right or wrong, there's something amiss. And it's about growing revenue. And then it said something in there that, and I've talked to you since then, but it's like you were like an encyclopedia book sales guy at some point. Because I'm like, why do you, there's not very many people, and I've told your story in the public, there's not many people that are like, hey, I'm a professional cold caller and I know how to make it rain. What? Why wouldn't everybody hire you? So tell me a little bit about your story here on like going back to where, why do you pick this as a profession? Because it's not what you wanted to be as a kid. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, absolutely right. First of all, how I got into this was, when I was younger, I thought about being a sales guy, or I was actually considered being a priest. When I was in my, when I was in high school.
Now that didn't come out in the pre-interview.
Well, yeah.
All right.
I'm telling secrets, you know, this is exclusive, so.
All right.
But anyway, as I got older and I got into sales, I started my own business consulting company back about 20 years ago, and, I was going into companies, telling them what they were doing that they could improve on, and, I found that my, length of, the consulting gig was, short and sweet, so, I would, you know, spend 2 or 3 days and then I'd start pointing out things that they could improve on or things that they, were doing wrong. And, I found my consulting, tenure didn't last very long.
Why?
Well, I mean, I think it's hard for people to,
take advice from a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah. And to, you know, nobody likes to look at, what's wrong. Everybody wants to look at what's right. And, so I learned in being really blunt with people that, maybe that wasn't the best approach. So as I transitioned and I started, my background was in selling. As Ryan says, I used to sell encyclopedias. I started selling encyclopedias door to door. In the process of selling encyclopedias door to door, I start to understand the nature of selling and the nature of influencing people, and the nature of making things happen, and how important your mental mindset is, and how important it is how you interact with people. And how you help people see things that maybe they didn't see, or you help people change their state of mind or their mood as you talk to them, which enables you to it puts you in a position to further the conversation. So anyway, as I learned when I was doing consulting, it was a much easier sell if I went out and worked with them on the marketing and sales side, helped them land a few prospects and possibly a couple new customers, then all of a sudden everyone became a lot more interested in changing and listening to me, frankly.
Well, because then you all of a sudden could back up some stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just so much easier to look to the future and start molding yourself to the future rather than changing based on because somebody told you needed to.
How long have you been doing this?
20 years.
All right here in Kansas City. I mean, as far as where you live, but clients, I'm assuming you can go anywhere.
Yeah, I go anywhere. Most of my clients are in Kansas City. I travel all over the country, really all over the world for clients of mine.
Hey, do you remember getting your first gig?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I remember getting the, let me see here. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I mean, was it like just like, I can't believe he actually bought that. Now I got to deliver, right? Because right. Sales guys always oversell, and then the next thing you know, they're like, oh, gosh, I have to build that now.
Well, I was actually, I sold a cold calling seminar, and I hadn't developed it yet. So I had to go back. I was working with a travel agent, and I had to go back and design the cold calling seminar. But I think it was a unique, really unique concept, because what I was doing is teaching the travel agents to actually go out and get business rather than wait for business. Now, there was a lot of travel agents that weren't very pleased with that change in their business model, but it was I thought it was pretty innovative.
And is most of what you do cold calling? I mean, is it flat out cold calling? Because there's a whole theory out there that, and I mean, that we could talk for 20 minutes on this topic. A, it's not fun. There's call reluctancy. I'm scared of rejection. Oh, they're probably pretty busy. They don't want to talk to me. The phone feels like it's 50 pounds. And so one of the things I like about your story is you demystify it and just flat out say, I don't care. You have to do it.
Right. Well, part of being successful is you have to do things you don't want to do. Part of being a good salesperson is you have to learn to prospect. And so you need to understand that and accept that. And if you're unwilling to do that, you're not going to be very successful. Part of it, people who are good at anything is they do what they don't want to do. So you have to pick up the phone. You have to prospect. You have to accept that sometimes you're going to be annoying people when you call them and when you approach them about what you're selling. If you embrace that and accept that and have fun with it, it's generally not an issue. But I absolutely believe that a good salesperson knows how to cold call.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we're talking with Dennis Sweeney from Dennis Sweeney Business Consulting, self-proclaimed rainmaker, hired gun, somebody that can do the things that take your company to a new level that you may or not be doing. And when we come back from break, I want to dig into a little bit about how do you cold call? How do you get past the gatekeeper? Because I know my listening audience deals with this day in and day out, and my sales managers are like, I need to talk to this guy. And the sales guys are like, ooh, this, I don't like this. So you're live with Rink and Laura. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Live with Rink and Laura. I'm flying solo today in the cockpit. Laura's out on the town, and I've got Dennis Sweeney from Dennis Sweeney Business Consulting with me live in the guest today. Brought to you by Kretcher Heartland, KretcherHeartland.com. And it's an awesome story because Dennis Sweeney is a self-proclaimed rainmaker and a cold calling machine and a hired gun for companies that are trying to grow revenue, which is the whole point of a for-profit company. And prior to break, we're talking about the dreaded cold call. It sucks. It's not fun. The phone's heavy. But you've got to do it. You've got to do it. And so one of the things that we were talking about at break, which I think is important, is you don't have to cold call forever. Right? You've got a theory behind that, but you got to do something consistently. So tell me, I'm a new kid. Let me set the stage. I'm a new hire. I'm from Chicago. I just relocated my family. I have no natural network, but somebody hired me to go sell some stuff. So I've got choices, right? I could go to the networking thing here, and I could join an association here. I could join the chamber here. I don't know, I like that model. It's a slow grind model, and you can typically sniff out those guys pretty quick.
Right.
The fastest way to grow something is literally do the thing that sucks the most, which is cold call.
Right. Well, when I start working with a company, the first thing we do is we pick 20 customers we want to go after. So these are the 20, sometimes it's the 20 top customers that they've coveted for many, many years. So I don't look for a lot of companies to go after. I look at 20. And then I take these 20 and then I start cold calling them. And my cold calling takes place in the context of business research, of gaining business intelligence. In order to make a sale, in order for a small company to make a sale to a big company, you have to understand the big company. You have to understand how they operate. You have to understand their needs. You have to understand how they're organized. You have to understand who the decision makers are. The only way you're going to do that at the end of the day is by making some cold calls. Maybe not a bunch of cold calls. Maybe not everyone gets a cold call, but you're going to have to make some cold calls. So when you make these cold calls, You need to embrace them. It has to be done. It's part of the job. Now, I was telling Ryan before break is that if you pick 20 companies and you cold call hard for 18 months, you may not have to cold call very much after that. Now, I think you always should be cold calling, but you don't need to cold call 100% of the time or 80% of the time. Part of building your customer base is doing cold calling. When you start developing your customer base, you can your percent of cold calling dwindles.
So even though it may not be fun, you're saying that over a period of time, 18 months, pick it, whatever, that if you cold call politely and persistently, and you're not mean, and
right.
you know you've got some sort of relationship skill, and eventually, if you're talking to the right person, the decision maker, and you cold calling, or you're drip marketing to them and soft selling them, and then continuing to call and say, you eventually don't become cold anymore, right?
Absolutely.
And then there's something I've read somewhere. It's persistence is everything.
Absolutely.
And I've heard many a times before that, why did you hire me? Well, because you were hungry. You kept calling, and this is why you get your opportunity today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the I've closed deals where I've cold called guys a couple hundred times before they set up the meeting with me. And I'm sure during that 200 times that I'm calling them, they get annoyed with me at, from time to time as they screen my call and say, oh, Sweeney is calling me again. However,
you should change your name to like Mike and like pretend like you're from the Royals.
There you go.
But, you know, the cold calling thing is one way, right? So when you get in there, why does a company hire you? I mean, what's their pain point when they're like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to hire this guy.
Well, most of the time people hire me because their sales are flat or slightly declining.
But they've got a sales force already, I'm sure, right?
But, you know, salespeople don't like making cold calls, and salespeople don't make cold calls. So I bring in an approach that starts with a cold call and ends with new customers. You know, I'll take you all the way through that process. Everybody's intrigued by the fact that I'm willing to go generate prospects. But at the end of the day, I'm hired and continuing being paid because I'm able to close business.
So, fine. You just said something that I could hire you to open up doors, whoop-de-doo, right? Not whoop-de-doo. That's important. You got to have meetings. You got to have FaceTime. But at the end of the day, you drive results by closing deals as well. So, I'm Dennis Sweeney, business consultant. I can open doors and close deals, which means I make money for your company.
Right.
Right?
And a lot of small companies really struggle with growing their business and getting into new customers.
Well, like, what's a sweet spot client? Because you're not going to go work for Quick Trip.
No. I usually work for companies that a lot of manufacturing, industrial clients. I work for engineering companies, professional service. I'm generally selling business to business. You know, my companies are anywhere from $50 million to $5 million in size. But so, I have worked with brand new companies, startup companies.
Because they obviously need revenue as well, too,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Well, everyone's trying to build relationships. You know, that's what you talk a lot about is building relationships. Cold calling is just building a relationship. When it stops being a cold call about 30 seconds into the call if you're talking to the person about something they're interested in. Then it's not a cold call anymore. Then it becomes a conversation. So that's what you got. People are very reticent about cold calling, but really, when I was working with the travel agents, if somebody was interested in traveling, 15 seconds after the call began, they began talking about where they wanted to go fly to. Not a cold call anymore.
Not a cold call anymore. Interesting. So when you're trying to do so, pretend like we use your theory of let's just pick 20, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll just speak for ourselves. Marco and I are a very fast-growing 401k consulting company, all right? But we don't market real well. We don't. Something we're struggling with today. We don't market real well. Now, Allie, you're looking at me like I'm crazy. But my point is, so I want to pick 20 people to flat out go after.
Right.
All right. So how do I do you talked about business intelligence. How do I do recon on who the decision maker is, what color of clothes they like, where they shop, what sports their kids are in? Because if I could make it personal and show that I've done some research, and if I know that she loves to quilt, and I send her a new knitting needle thing, along with a note that says, hey, I know you like this, but there's all kinds of different personalized approaches you can make to cold calling, right?
Right.
How do you find that intelligence?
Well,
you're not just picking up the phone saying, hey, do you like to knit?
I do a lot of my business intelligence research, though, while making cold calls.
Like what?
Like, is this person in today? What time do they usually get in? Can I catch them on the weekends? You know, if you call 10 times or 20 times and you never catch them, you develop a relationship with the receptionist or their secretary, and they'll share information with you. So, yeah, you can Google it, you can go to LinkedIn, but you can develop a lot of information. Talk to the secretary, talk to people who work for them, send them emails, send the secretary an email, ask for a referral, ask the
What about send the secretary roses? I'm gonna pre-roses. I'm going to bug you for the next 20 calls, and I wanted to give you a heads up that I'm looking for a little bit of information because I'm trying to get to this guy. Here's some roses.
Well,
is that hokey?
I send roses after or flowers after somebody helps me sometimes.
Do you?
After a secretary helps me. I generally don't do that up front. I might send something that tries to catch people's attention. But in a business-to-business transaction, when a sale is made, there's usually two or three or four people that are involved in the decision. So I might start with the CEO or start with the controller or start with the VP of manufacturing. But in my approach, where I've picked 20 companies that I'm going after, and I've qualified these 20 companies, and I know they spend a lot of money.
On whatever product that you're selling.
Whatever I'm selling, they spend a lot, and they're worthy of me spending the next 18 months understanding who they are and understanding the people in the company. So I'm building relationships with four or five different people. I try not to get stuck on one person.
All right, fine. So what you're saying is that when you're doing B2B transactions, there's typically not one person that has full carte blanche control to say yes.
Absolutely.
It's usually a committee or a subcommittee of two or three people that collaborate. Let me ask you this. In business decisions like that, when you've got committees, do you think corporations sit around on purpose and say, let's build a committee so nobody can sell us and we can always defer, like, well, Jim needs to be involved? Or are they really building committees? Because it's just kind of a dumb question, but they need more minds. The power of two or three minds are better than one. But it's a nice default. And I'll give you a great example. Marco and I get pitched all the time. These people want us to, we need an opportunity with 2S. We need an opportunity with 2S. It's beautiful because they may catch me accidentally because somebody accidentally forwarded me a call and I answered it. I'm like, dang it.
Right.
But then I can always be like, I got to talk to my partner.
Right.
I can always lay back on that.
Right.
Versus just letting the guy down and just say, hey, no.
Yeah, really. If you're committed to being a good salesperson, you understand the dynamics of an organization, the dynamics of people and how they make decisions. You're not going to make a decision in your company all alone. You're going to make it with your partner. So if I'm selling you a big product like, a $100,000 computer system or something, I'm going to have to work you and I got to work your partner. I got to find out what you want. I got to find out what your partner wants. And sometimes I have to facilitate you two talking. And you know how I do that? I schedule a meeting with both of you. That's how you make that happen. You got to understand organizational dynamics. Cold calling taught me organizational dynamics because through cold calling, I began to understand the way people work, the way people blow people off, the way people don't return my phone calls. So you got to understand the way the dynamic of an organization and how people work. Cold calling also taught me how people work.
Hey, we're talking with Dennis Sweeney of Dennis Sweeney Business Consulting. You're live with Rink and Laura. We're talking about cold calling, driving revenue, doing stuff that's way out of people's comfort zones. When we come back, I want to get into Dennis's brain a little bit on all these different systems, because there's sales systems and sales training and sales techniques, and I want to get his opinion on which ones work and which ones don't. So you're live with Rink and Laura on KBZB Business Channel. We'll be right back. So, of course, we've got Blondie Call Me, which I love. Thank you, Mr. Robert, for paying attention. Actually, listening to the show, you're live with Rink and Laura. I'm flying solo in the cockpit today, talking with Dennis Sweeney, Business Consulting. And Dennis is a we've been talking about cold calling. I mean, the guy's a hired gun. He is a rainmaking cold calling machine. And I've heard sales drive revenue. But, Dennis, I want to talk to you about the intricacies, if that's even a word. I want to get into the weeds of the call.
Right.
Okay. Prior to doing that, though, I want you to demystify something for me. Because sales guys in an interview, they show well, they dress nice, they're wordsmiths, they're awesome, they test really cool on whatever test you're going to put them through. But at the end of the day, it's a very risky hire, right?
Yeah.
Because they're going to tell you, I won this award, I won this, and cold calling's awesome, and I don't care. And then all of a sudden, you pay them a couple bucks, and you bring them in, and I'm sorry, it's hard to find. So my point is, there's this thing out there in the sales world. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not, about the million-dollar producer, right? Everybody
right.
likes to find the million-dollar producer, the guy that can bring in a new $1 million to your firm that you didn't have before. A, do they exist? B, if they do, where do you find them? And three, how do you pay them? Because don't you pay them pretty well? So how, do they exist?
Well, I think it's the fantasy of most small business owners that the there's a guy out there that can come in and sell new customers and bring in new business who will be happy working for you. If they were able to do that without any of assistance, they'd probably be competing against you, not selling for you.
I've heard that theory before.
Yeah.
So, it's the same thing I've heard before, is they don't exist because if they do, they're already an entrepreneur doing something else.
Right. Now, I think there's people who can become good salespeople, and I've read this book, The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Owens. Chad Owens, I think that's his name. And his one criteria when he's doing an interview with a salesperson is somewhere during the interview, he'll say to him, I don't really feel it. I don't really think that you're the position for the job. And really what he's testing for is if they will challenge what he just said, if they'll stand up and say, I disagree with you, or why do you say that? If they just naturally or simply accept what he says,
you're out.
Then they're not a good candidate.
That's a
for
red
sales.
Flag.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that's really a good benchmark to see if you got somebody. And then ultimately, you got to teach people how to make calls, and they got to be willing to, do the tough work of pushing people. And sometimes being a salesperson is you're pushy, and you need to accept that and stop whining about it.
Do you remember when Tommy Boy and David Spade were out trying to sell brakes?
Yeah.
And every time Tommy Boy would roll into a new thing to sell whatever Callahan brakes they were selling, I'd be like, no, okay, thanks, all right.
Right.
And through his maturation process of becoming a salesperson, he eventually came back to stand up for himself and say, you know what, you're wrong. My brakes are blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of what you're saying, you're testing that guy.
Absolutely.
If you find him, how do you pay him? Do you tie him to his book? Do you give him ownership? Do you pay him 50%, 40%? What's normal? If you can find a kid, because can't you become a million-dollar producer over the course of 3 or 4 years if you're doing $250,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
So does the million-dollar producer have to be, ooh, I did it in 12 months? Or can it be, hey, I brought $1 million in the last 5 years. Is that a good thing? Are we okay with them?
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on your business model and how much profit you're making and how you can how you want to pay your salespeople. I personally like to pay salespeople a base salary so they don't have to worry about
food,
providing room and board for themselves.
Okay.
And then what I like to do is pay them a commission or a percent based on their performance. So, I've worked in a lot of different situations and worked with a lot of people who think that if you don't pay the salesperson anything, you'll keep him hungry. To people who don't want to incentivize the sales guy because then they're going to lie to everyone. So, I've worked with people in all areas in between. Personally, I'm self-motivated, so good salespeople are self-motivated. So I think you should throw them, put them in a compensation system where they can make a lot of money if they're successful. But salespeople also need recognition. That's salespeople are very driven by that. We want to be noticed. We want to be recognized. Sometimes when I'm working with some of my clients, I say, listen, I just did something pretty extraordinary. You might want to close down Main Street and have a flipping parade for me. This is pretty great. I really believe that. The sales, when I do something great, I want people to recognize that. That's part of being a salesperson and being, the guy that's able to produce great results.
I love recognition. And I think in a lot of cases, from a sales standpoint, I've always liked that more. I got to get up and receive an award, and I won a trip. And ooh, look at me. And an email went out to the entire organization that said, you landed the number one position out of 110. Woo!
Right.
I like that more than the bonus check.
Right.
Because I know the bonus check will be there. But I like to be able to walk around in that sales meeting, right? And everybody's like, dang, man, did you see what Rink did? That's cool. Look, he got a new coat. Whatever.
Right.
You know, that recognition is key. And let me ask you this. Is there a difference between a salesman and a prospector? And can you, does he exist that he's good at both?
Well, I think I'm very good at both. I think sometimes people hire me because of my prospecting, but what they really should be happy with is that I can close business. At the end of the day, prospecting is worthless unless you close business.
But can you separate the two and say, hey, I've got a good prospector, he's got an appointment, we've got a runner, and then bring in a team that is more of the intellectual property, some of the management that can close the deal? Maybe not a great prospector, but an awesome salesman.
No, I think you can. I think the only thing I get concerned about is when I read ads in the newspaper saying no cold calling required. I think good salespeople have to have the knack of furthering relationships in an account. So what I mean by that is Cold calling teaches you to go do it. Just to go do it. Don't wait for an introduction. Just go introduce yourself. There's a lot of times that I use that skill set when I'm in the middle of trying to close a sale and I'm not getting somebody to respond to me, or I've gotten somebody's name and I'll just cold call them in the organization to find out what's going on, where they stand on a particular project or particular proposal. So the knack of understanding where there's opportunities, that's all fleshed out while you cold call. You start developing a smell, you know, when you're talking to the receptionist or you're talking to somebody in the organization and they start talking about what's going on in the organization. As you cold call, you start developing the intuition and the smell that, hey, there's some opportunities here. So I think you can separate it. I think people can begin telemarketing and develop into salespeople. But I'm a little weary of the guy that won't cold call and thinks he's beyond that.
And also, a smart man once told me that you've got a cold call simply because it just keeps you sharp. It keeps you sharp on what's going on in the marketplace, how to overcome objections, how to face rejection, and just keeps you sharp.
Absolutely. From the interacting with the receptionist, having fun with the receptionist. You know, sometimes I call people 10 or 15 times over a week's period when I got a hot proposal and they're blowing me off. So I'll call them. So they'll pick up the phone. I'll say, hey, Ryan, you're a tough guy to reach. So rather than allowing him to tell me, why in the hell do you keep calling me? I'm proactive and I address the issue way before he has a chance to articulate anything. I say, Ryan, you're a tough guy to reach. You must be really busy. So what that does, though, and why I'm tying this into cold calling is, cold calling, selling quick on your feet is about anticipating where people are going in a conversation, and you get there before they do, and you make it positive rather than negative. So instead of you saying, why you keep bothering me, I say, Ryan, you're a busy dude and you're tough to reach. And you know what? You're not mad. You're like, yeah, I am.
Yeah,
I
am.
The fact that I've called you for 15 times over the last 2 or 3 days, you're like, well, he's acknowledging the fact that he's been bothering me, and you know what? He's complimented me in the process of this a short conversation. Dennis, what can I do you for?
And so when you finally get a hold of that person, okay, so there's the call, and you finally get a hold of that person, and he literally says, all right, what are you selling? What do you need? Why are you trying to get a hold of me? What do you do?
I say, what are you buying?
What are you buying? Okay, role play with me right now. Okay, what do you mean, what am I buying? You called me.
All right.
What are you selling?
Yeah, I work for so-and-so. I work for the so-and-so company, and the reason I'm calling is because I sell I work for an injection molder right now. So let's say I sell injection molding.
All right.
Now, I get really blunt with my cold call to the person because if it's a cold call, I'm assuming that he doesn't have a lot of time. He's not anticipating the call. So I say, hey, I sell injection molding. And then I pause a minute and I listen to see if I can hear from your expression whether I got the right guy.
So let's just say stop you're a for a buyer. Second. You just said you want to see on the phone if you right. can hear what my nonverbal communication was.
Right.
Interesting.
So what I'm listening for is a grunt. I'm listening for yes, like continue. I'm listening for uh-huh. So you pick up these phones from these telemarketers working for Sprint, you know, and they're like, they talk for the first 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. No, that's not the way to do it. What you do is you say, Ryan, I work for an injection molder, and I'm calling you because I understand you're the guy that buys injection molding. And then I pause, and I wait for some type of verbal or nonverbal response from you.
I say, okay.
Okay.
I don't give you everything. I don't give you nothing. I just go neutral and say, okay.
Yeah, but what okay is saying is continue, right? When you say okay to me, you're saying continue. You're not saying, hey, I don't have time to speak to you. You're not saying, hey, buzz off. You're not saying you got the wrong guy. When you say okay, you're saying continue. So then I got another 2 or 3 sentences that I can lay another 2 or 3 sentences on you.
And at the end of the day, you're trying to get an appointment.
That's maybe. What I'm trying to do, I'm gathering business intelligence. So what I'm going to say to you is, Ryan, if you say okay, I'll say, Ryan, I work for a company that's based in Grandview, Missouri. We manufacture these types of injection molded products. We work for these types of companies. How many injection molders do you have?
16.
16. How much do you spend a year?
$2.2 million on that product.
Okay. How many do you spend globally? How much are you responsible for spending a year?
$14.9 million.
Okay, beautiful. Now, I've just gathered a lot of business intelligence. So when I first start cold calling, I'm just looking to find people who are buying a lot what I'm selling.
So you're trying to, at this point, you're qualifying. Pretend like you've already got the 20.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Okay. But
now after you've got the 20 and you've got all the intelligence, don't you want to set an appointment?
Yeah, right. When you said 14.9 million, I'd say, Ryan, when can we come see you? We'd like to come visit with you.
So here, fine. Me being the sales guys are awful to sell to because I'm just immediately, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Friday's fine. Right, and then I hang up the phone and I'm like, dang it, I let another sales guy in here. Sales guys are awful to sell to. I want to finish this conversation.
We're easy sales.
We're easy sales because I don't know how to say no.
Exactly.
It's awful.
I like it when people work at getting an appointment. I'm like, yeah, that's great. Hey, I like to buy from people who come door to door.
I agreed, especially if they're encyclopedia dudes.
Yeah,
I love
exactly.
It. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. I think Marco Ongashek, CEO of 2S Advisors, is going to join us, give a quick tip on how to retire ready. And then we're going to finish up with Dennis Sweeney of Dennis Sweeney Business Consulting. You're live with Rink and Laura. We'll be right back. Back with Dennis Sweeney. And, you know, it all comes down to money. For-profit companies are trying to drive revenue and make money. The whole show has been talking about cold calling. Dennis Sweeney Business Consulting is a way of getting your company to generate more revenue. And he's been proving that he can do it for 20 years. I love it. Dennis, I got a question for you though. How old are you?
I'm 50 years old.
You're 50.
Yeah.
How do you scale your talent? How do you scale it? I talk about this all the time. People are buying the DS. They're buying the Dennis Sweeney concept.
Right.
How do you take what you're doing, if it's successful, which it is, and have Jimmy do it and Joni do it so they can bring in revenue to your firm? So you can't do this until you're 80. I'm sorry.
Right.
So you've got an exit strategy issue.
Yes.
Okay. Let's just get it out there.
Right.
How do you think through that? Or are you
look at Sandler. Sandler had developed a system. I could develop my own system, or I could develop people to implement my system and to train people. So
is there a control issue? Like, ooh, that would scare me a little bit because you're good. You're good,
yeah,
right?
I think there's I like my job. I like doing what I'm doing. I find it very interesting, and it's very rewarding to land big deals. I mean, it's a thrill. So, but I'm training somebody now, and I have to move in that direction. There's a ton of need for what I'm doing. There's a ton of need for these type of consulting and the results we're getting. So I have to put the chips back up on the table and reinvest and
I have an idea.
Train
then.
Some people.
Why couldn't you just sell to salespeople? Meaning, why don't you just go sell to the Sandler guys and to the other widget guys and the other people and say, hey, you guys have a system. I have a system. There's no reason that your system shouldn't incorporate cold calling, and I can cold call better than you guys because that's what I do for a living, and why couldn't you sell to those types of folks to match and mirror and potentially do that? Or is that a bad idea? I might have just gone different ways.
No, I don't think that's a bad idea. I just haven't thought of that.
I love it. You're like, no, it's not bad. It's not good. It's not mine. I don't know.
There might be, I've done some cold calling seminars where I've taught people how to cold call. I was just looking at a Covey business development training manual yesterday. So I think there's a lot of applications. One of the things I really enjoy is I'm working with small businesses, and the opportunity to make a difference with a small business is huge. And the opportunity to bring one or two customers in can really impact their revenue.
So all I just heard was there's a soft side, going back to the priest as a kid. There's a soft side in gratification of it's not about the money. It's not about the close, the kill, the sale. There's a little bit of gratification back to you to say, you know what? I actually made an impact and helped that company, and I can see it and feel it. And as you're driving away, that feels good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. Because small business drives everything. I forget the percentage, but what is the percentage? It's something like 97% of American is all small business, and it defines like less than 500 employees or something like that, right?
Absolutely.
Dude, I love it. And, you're welcome back at our campfire anytime. And I have a feeling that you will be back, whether it's calling in once in a while or just getting some nuggets. I do have a question for you because this whole show is about doing good in the community, right?
Right.
And driving bottom line profit so that we can keep employees happy, keep them healthy, keep more jobs in our own community. You do some stuff, in the community that is tied to your career as well. And, I think you've got something that you've done for your brother or brother-in-law or something that you help out with his nonprofit in the form of creating.
Well, my brother started a school over in St. Louis that I did some work with. I've done some work with Crossroads Academy here in town. They're a nonprofit charter school in downtown Kansas City. They started about a year ago. I've done some work with the Kansas City Free Health Clinic, the worked on the Bloom Committee. So, you know, my brothers and I, we do donate some to different charities around town, back to our high school, O'Hara High School.
What high school is this?
O'Hara.
O'Hara.
Yeah.
You're one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know what? You didn't make it up north to Park Hill very often, did you?
No.
Dang it, you're missing out. The Northland is
hot. We didn't get north of the river very often.
Come on, dude. Nobody does. Nobody in Kansas City comes north, and I don't get it. Y'all think something's weird up there. I'm telling you, it's not all tank tops, mustaches, and Camaros. We have some game up north.
Yes.
All right, let's just talk. We got Zona Rosa, which is cool.
Airport.
We've got the airport. We've got all kinds of stuff. So that's good stuff, man. So in a couple minutes here, wrapping up, what's a couple tips for my lackadaisical BC level sales guys out there that are listening to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to learn something from this cat and I'm going to go impress my boss. What am I doing?
Well,
I love it. You're like, pick up phone.
Exactly.
Do something.
Yeah. Make cold calls. I mean, the greatest thrill of making a cold call is finding a prospect. The greatest way to impact my mood when I started my sales career is to find a prospect. The quickest and easiest way to do that is to pick up the phone and call somebody. Have a meaningful conversation. That's what cold calling is all about. You're trying to have a meaningful conversation. But in order to do that, you got to pick up the phone. The short rejection or people blowing you off, get over it.
Get over it.
Yeah.
Get over it. Somebody told me a while ago that 50 years from now, give or take a decade or two, guys like you and I aren't going to be remembered. Whoop-de-doo. Our grandkids aren't going to really know us. And once we're dead in that generation, the great-grandkids, I don't know. Do you know your great-grandparents?
I knew one of them.
Oh, dang it. You're blowing up my theory. You're blowing up my theory. No, but you're just saying, pick up the phone, get over it, and, go have fun with it, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Go have fun with it.
You gotta do it. And if you accept that, that's, half the battle is accepting the fact that, it's part of the job. And, I enjoy cold calling now as I've done it for so long. And, I have great conversations in cold calls, and you can too. But you have to start. The thing is, you have to do it. If you do it regularly, you'll get comfortable.
Well, on behalf of my guest, Mr. Dennis Sweeney, Business Consulting, and my co-host who's not here tonight, Laura and I stamp you as a good man and a good company. Thanks. We'll be back with Bank of Kansas City next week. See you later.
Thank you.